Good morning, lockdown campers. We're back with another episode of Beyond Busy, the show where we talk productivity, work-life balance, and how people define happiness and success. My name's Graham Alcott. I'm your host for the show. And on this episode, I'm talking to Sarah Ellis. She is one half of Amazing If and one half of the author team behind the book, The Squiggly Career, just come out. So we're going to talk a little bit about the book. And also, we talk about a load of really interesting stuff in this episode. So we talk about personal manifestos. We talk about her six-year transition from employed to gainly self-employed. She used to work for Sainsbury's in head of corporate responsibility and society. So we talk about how Sainsbury's have been dealing with the current crisis and the loo roll shortage and all that stuff. And just a whole lot more. So I think you're going to really enjoy this conversation. So let's get pretty much straight into it. This is another one of these ones recorded down the line during lockdown. So a little bit of COVID chat, but not too much. Let's get straight into it. Here's our episode with Sarah Ellis.
I'm with Sarah Ellis. How are you?
I'm good, thanks, Graham. How are you doing?
I'm good. Yeah, we just had a little chat before we pressed record and swapped our war stories on books and everything else. We've not talked that much about COVID and lockdown life and all that. So let's start with that. Where are you? How has it been? How are you surviving this very crazy, interesting year that we're in?
Well, I think like many people, the roller coaster of emotions is not just a weekly thing, it's a daily thing. I think I have over the weeks got better at coping and adapting, and I think working out what works for me. And you definitely, I think, grieve the loss of some of the things that we had previously, or I definitely do. I miss, like everybody, seeing family or friends. I miss Helen, my business partner, who I've not seen in real life now for a couple of months, and running a business completely remotely is a whole new proposition and one that we hadn't obviously anticipated or planned for. What I've sort of found is that I think in the early days, I think exercise was my savior, being honest. Almost it wasn't about work, and it wasn't about thinking about what was our business going to be. It was more about just keeping my mindset and my body in a good place, like almost trying to just, well, I always think I was processing everything. I said to my friends, actually, I think one of my bleakest moments was I went for a run and I think I was listening to some sort of Kelly Clarkson ballad, and she was singing about what doesn't kill us will make us stronger. And I think I was like, I ended up in tears like midway through like a 10K run. And I was like, oh, yeah. God, this is a whole new low that actually felt very embarrassing to now share with you. But I think that was actually me just getting over the, you know, all the things that you've had cancelled that you were really looking forward to.
For sure.
And actually, the other thing I think so many people have had to process is I think I felt guilty about feeling that way, because you do realise that you're still in a relatively fortunate position. You haven't got, you know, any health challenges, touch wood, at the moment. Certainly my family are all well. So you know that that's a good thing, but also you've got so many mixed emotions, I think, happening simultaneously. There's no wonder that sometimes you go for a run and halfway through you're in tears. But I do feel that as I've got used to it, and certainly over the past 6 weeks or so, started to kind of work in a new way, what I'm finding is there are some kind of really hopeful moments too. There are some examples of where we as a business are doing things more creatively, more innovatively. We're working in ways that has accelerated because of the way that we're working right now. And I think there's some really good stuff that comes out of this. And, you know, I get to see my toddler more, probably more than I really ever want to see him, being honest. But there's that upside. So I think at the moment, my current state and current mindset is actually starting to feel more hopeful, starting to see the opportunity, and I'm really actually starting to think about what are some of the things that we've learned that we don't want to lose, and what are some of the good things that have actually been better. So we've managed to improve things through having to adapt, being forced into it, that perhaps we want to keep. And I think there are some examples of that.
Yeah, so I want to hear a bit more about the lessons that you're seeing and the positives coming out of it a bit more in a minute. And we'll talk about Amazing If, of which you're the co-founder, one half of the Amazing If founding team. But yeah, I had a similar experience on the Sunday just before lockdown hit. I went to a gig, which just feels crazy now. And I was checking the Brighton Dome website all day, thinking this is going to have to get cancelled. Like, we're not going to be able to go to this gig. But just nothing came up on the page. So I rocked up there. And it was just one of the most incredible things I've ever experienced, because it was like all these people who sort of knew that lockdown was coming, and it just had this atmosphere like it was the last gig on earth. And it was this guy, John Hopkins, and he does these really beautiful piano, almost like sort of John Cage, Philip Glass stuff, like very, like lots of space and lots of resonance and reverb and all this kind of stuff. And then it transitions into really frenetic dance music, and everyone sat down in the Brighton Dome, and I was sat quite high up and just had this moment of sort of looking around and hearing this music and seeing this crowd and just breaking down, just started crying in the middle of this gig, you know, because it just felt like just this weird, almost like being stuck on the wrong planet experience. It was very, very surreal. But yeah, I think we probably all had those slightly weird moments where something as seemingly superficial as a Kelly Clarkson tune can just turn you into like a gibbering wreck.
You made me feel better.
Yeah, I know. And I think it's good to share these things, because I think, yeah, probably there are a lot of people who've had similar experiences over the last few weeks, for sure. I also heard a really interesting thing that he was on a podcast saying that the time in China where they noticed that most people were having the biggest struggles in terms of mental health was the 6-week mark. So that was apparently part of the thinking why they said, let's do 3 weeks and 3 weeks. And it was, you know, deliberately to try and mitigate this 6-week low factor. And I really felt it at the start of last week. The first couple of days last week, I just had this real sense of low, and it passed quite quickly. But whenever I was texting people about it, everyone was saying exactly the same thing. And kind of a weird thing. And certainly in my little online WhatsApp bubble last week, it seemed to be a pretty prevalent thing. But yeah, let's talk about some of the positives. So you're one half of Amazing If, and actually as a team, Amazing If's been growing as well. So there's more of you than just you and Helen. We've had Helen on the podcast before. So do you want to start just by doing a quick recap of what is Amazing If, and then maybe just some of the bits of learning or interesting things that you've been doing over the last few weeks in terms of how you've been transitioning your work and changing the way that you work?
Yeah, so Amazing If really came from almost an insight and an idea more than a business proposition. I don't think either has ever intended to start a business. It was just we wanted to solve a problem, which actually I think is how a lot of great businesses start, is you spot a problem and you have the initiative, or in my case, luckily, a brilliant business partner who can get on board with and decide to do something about it. And so for us, the problem that we spotted is that we felt like the shape and the nature of careers were really changing. But what wasn't changing was how people were learning and the support that they were getting with their own development. And so we both started our careers in very large organizations, very hierarchical, linear, predictable. You often knew what was coming next. It was quite easy to look upwards and to figure out what your path might be. And actually, probably 5 or 6 years into our careers, we started to just notice that actually there was more ambiguity, change, transitions, just in general, more uncertainty than we kind of ever experienced before. And this idea of aiming for a very specific destination, and it was only when you got to that destination that you'd be successful and happy, didn't feel like the right approach to our careers. And I did the classic and slightly cliche thing of drawing a little picture on a napkin in the days where we met in person and got a coffee and drawing a little staircase like ladder and almost saying, it's not this anymore. It's squiggly, and just drawing a big squiggle. And that's where this squiggly career idea really came from. This idea that progression doesn't always have to mean promotion, that we're working in so many different ways now, that the majority of us don't do the same thing day in, day out, that most of us don't work on a 9-to-5, and that the three-stage life of education, work and retirement is disappearing. People's lives, we're going to work for longer. We are probably all likely at some point to be employed and self-employed and perhaps freelance. And actually, across our working lives, we're probably going to have 3 to 4 different types of career. So I don't think anyone expects to have a job for life anymore. But I think when you start to realize I'm probably actually going to have three or four different types of career, that really starts to broaden your horizons in terms of how you think about your career. And the thing that we really are really passionate about is how can we democratize career development? So again, traditionally in that ladder-like world, a lot of the best career development was really the reserve of the most senior people. The more senior you got, the better the access to learning and development. And that's sometimes quite difficult to make development available to everybody in an organization, particularly in big organizations. And that's historically how organizations in a more command and control world obviously felt like that was the right thing to do. And now when we have this squiggly environment, you know, we think everybody should have the opportunity to learn, to develop, to think about their career, to explore their career possibilities. And we think that learning should be affordable, open, accessible, and really on demand. So available for when people need it and flexible. So it works in a way that works for you, depending on, you know, how you work and the rest of your life. And that was the thing that we really wanted to do. We wanted to start developing content, whether it's podcasts or workshops or books or whatever we were creating, that really helped solve that problem in a very practical and action focused way. I think someone described us the other day as relentlessly practical, which I think was a compliment, but I do think we want everything that we talk about is something that we want people to be able to use the next day at work in a very useful way that makes a difference to your day to day, I guess.
And one of the things I love that you guys do is on your Instagram stories, if you've been to an event or read a book or heard a talk or something, and I've had this done with me actually when I was on your podcast, and then like 2 days later, I see like your Instagram stories is summarizing everything I've done for 5 years in like 8 really neat Instagram stories or whatever. So I've been on the other side, but I really love those stories because it just feels like you can take things away really quickly and simply and like you say, apply it the next day.
Yeah. So I think one of the things that we are really passionate about is the so what. So when people have developed really brilliant ideas or big thinking, in some ways I think, you know, TED Talks and those kind of things are really inspirational. But they can also feel quite overwhelming to people because perhaps, you know, you watch these really big ideas and I think often, or certainly if you're anything like me, you perhaps struggle to work out what does that mean for me in my world, in the work that I do. And one of the things that I'm always a bit cautious of, those big statements that actually you do often see on places like Instagram of where people or brands are really proposing that everyone should just do what you love and these pithy, big, inspirational quotes. And I do worry a little bit that that at times puts pressure on people. You feel like, oh, well, maybe what happens if I don't love every moment of every day? Is that okay? Or what do I need to be doing about that?
What happens if I don't find my magic purpose?
Yeah. And yeah. I do feel that comparison culture, which I think is a really nice way to describe it, is very alive and well in the world of careers. Mm. So it's even easier than ever to compare our careers and our progress to our peers, to people we don't know on Instagram or on LinkedIn. Yeah. And this sense of, am I going far enough and fast enough? And the thing that we really try to encourage people to figure out is, what does success mean to you? And that will look and feel different to your friends or other members of your family. And if you are guided by some of the things that we talk about really practically around knowing your strengths, using your strengths, understanding your values, so the things that really motivate and drive you, get rid of those confidence gremlins, the things that can hold you back from things you really want to do, build relationships in a way that works for you. All these kind of practical skills that are very useful regardless of what job or industry you're in. I think that what that helps you to do is start to make the right choices and decisions for you versus what you think you should do or could do or perhaps what your manager's telling you to do. And then I think once you feel like you've got a bit more ownership and control of that squiggle, I think you can make the squiggly career work for you versus feeling like it's something maybe that's happening to you and causing you anxiety or to feel overwhelmed.
Yeah, for sure. And even just the idea of the squiggle as opposed to viewing a staircase, to me, it sort of opens up your radar in terms of the possibilities and other things that you can explore rather than just looking at what's the thing that I'm supposed to do next, right?
Yeah, and we've been conditioned, I think, from that interview question, tell me what you want to be doing in 5 years' time. That's a really classic interview question. And if I could kill that interview question, I would do, because I feel like it's a really unreasonable expectation now, especially when I think about the last 3 or 4 jobs that I've done didn't exist before I did them in the same guise. So asking me to anticipate that feels pretty unrealistic and unfair. The thing that we would always encourage people to think about is to explore multiple possibilities at the same time. And so that you're always staying very curious, you're keeping an eye open for what you are interested in, what you might do, what you could do. It doesn't mean that you have to do all of those things next. It just means that you are having that broader horizons in terms of your perspective. And we were chatting about, I run Amazing If Now, so I now run my own business. That's how I spend the majority of my time. But it's taken 6 years for me to get to this point. I've run Amazing If alongside my full-time job. I've run Amazing If one day a week, and I've run it evenings and weekends. So I've done it in loads of different ways, shapes and forms. And it's always been a career possibility for me. But it only became the next career possibility for me in the last 6 months or so. And actually, at some point, one of the reasons I think for exploring possibilities is sometimes to realize that it's not for you. And I think that's actually part of the reason for doing it. It's okay to try and get as close as you can to something you're intrigued by, only to realize actually perhaps that wouldn't be a good fit for you. Perhaps your strengths are not that useful in that context. I've certainly done that before. I remember thinking in my marketing years, in my number one career, that I really wanted to make TV ads. And the closer I got to the reality of what that looked and felt like, the more I thought, oh, actually, I wouldn't be very good at that. It takes efficiency, project management, and it's kind of lots of steps in a process. I thought it'd be very creative. And it is if you're the person making the ad. But if you're the person managing the process, it actually isn't necessarily all that creative. Right. And so I was so glad that I spent some time shadowing. I'd asked some questions. I went and talked to somebody who led that team. And it just started to feel almost less like the right thing for me. It would have been perfect for somebody else. And actually, I then made a different decision about what I then wanted to explore next as a result of being curious about it. And also then not being afraid to change your mind. You have that prerogative. It's okay to say, actually, that's not for me.
Yeah, we need to make it easier and more acceptable for people to say, number one, I'm experimenting and I don't know, but I'm going to check it out. And number two, I've checked it out and just decided that it's not what I want to do. It's almost like a taboo, isn't it? That you're not really allowed to make, you know, or it's termed as like making a career mistake. And it's almost, you know, we need to categorize it as not a mistake, but just an exploration or curiosity.
And actually that word experimentation, I'm seeing a real, that's coming up again and again in some of the people that I'm speaking to, some of the research that I'm reading. I really like the work of Margaret Heffernan. She's just released a book called Uncharted. And she talks about experimentation is about prototyping the future you want to create. And that's really stuck with me. And she really advocates for us all having an experimenting mindset, because she distinguishes between the difference between a complicated world where actually things do fit together a bit easier. It's a bit more like the staircase that I described. And a complex world, which is where we all find ourselves, where actually to navigate complexity, we need to get better at experimenting actually in quite a thoughtful, practical way. And that really applies, I think, to how we think about our careers, is actually being quite conscious about the experiments that we are undertaking, and also then being very comfortable that some of those will work better than others, some of those will last longer, and that it is, like you say, it's okay to say that that's not for me. I'm starting to see, actually, I feel encouraged that some people I know who have gone into new roles or new industries, and actually then it's only maybe by, sometimes there's only so much you can learn before you do something. And I do think once you're in it, you really do learn the ins and outs. And I hope it's becoming more okay to actually probation periods, to actually be probation for everyone. That's one of the things that I would really like to change, that perhaps probation periods get longer. So perhaps they're more like 6 months, and it's not a tick box exercise. And also it's not the word probation is probably not that helpful, because that almost sounds like you're kind of, do I have to keep proving myself? And it maybe puts quite a lot of pressure on the individual. But if it was more of a trying out period or an experimenting period, especially if you've moved into something that's quite far away from what you did previously, I actually think having that 6 months and then it being absolutely okay for everyone at the end of that to go, this actually hasn't felt quite right. There's actually a company over in the US where they, if that happens, people can leave and they actually also get cash. So they actually also say, we recognize that we don't want people here where it's just not a good fit and it's not right for you. So we will.
That's Zappos, right?
It is, yeah. So they give people, like, I think it's like a couple of months of salary to just give you that extra time to figure out what you want to do next.
And pay you to leave because we don't want you here mucking up the culture and being toxic for 20 years because you're not quite right, whatever.
And you know, that exact example won't work for everyone, but I do think that sort of thinking is actually useful. And it also recognises that it might just have not been the right time and it might just have not been quite the right job. But who knows, we're seeing more and more what we call boomerang employees, which is where people are going back to organisations where they've got a strong fit with the culture, the values. And so it might be that that person might come back in 3 or 4 years.
And so just building on that experimentation theme and coming back to the COVID thing. So obviously amazing if a large part of what you do, similar to Think Productive, is you go into businesses, you do workshops, you talk to people face to face, all the stuff that is no longer allowed.
Yes.
So what have you been finding in terms of what have you noticed that's changes for the better and you doing things in different ways over the last few weeks?
I think what has been interesting is one of the things that we really want to do, we talked about this idea of democratizing career development, and one of the ways and the routes to that is clearly technology. Technology means that everybody can be part of something. It means it's very scalable. Depending on what you're doing in terms of learning, it can be very on demand. So people can do it at the right moment for them, which is particularly important right now. People are caring for people or homeschooling, you know, getting people together all at exactly the same time perhaps isn't always that realistic or feasible. And so for us, I think what's really reassuring is we have seen definitely a surge of interest in terms of people, I think, recognizing they need to take more ownership for their own career development. So from an individual perspective, people joining some of our live learning that we do. So we do something called Pod Plus every Thursday at 9 o'clock, where for half an hour we discuss a podcast topic and we do some drawing and some tools and just talk about an idea in a bit more detail. And that's just 30 minutes of live career development stuff together as a group. It's sort of our equivalent of what Joe Wicks does for millions of people. but ours is all about career development and he's getting everybody fit. So things like that, I don't think we would have perhaps started that, and I don't think we would have had the interest and support for it if we weren't in the current context that we're in right now. I think that's brilliant that people are really getting the benefit from that and prioritizing just a little bit of time in their week to spend some time learning. Because so often we hear that your own personal learning related to your job or related to your career ends up being bottom of your to-do list. Or it ends up being the thing that you think, oh, I'll just spend half an hour on a Friday afternoon. And as soon as I hear that, I'm always thinking, there is no way you're going to spend half an hour on a Friday afternoon doing that. So I think that gives me a lot of hope that that's perhaps a behavior and a habit that people are forming right now to prioritize their own learning, to care about, really care and think about their career and spend some time on their self-awareness and actions and what that might mean for them, really reflecting. So I think that's been great. And I think from a company perspective, I've been so impressed by some companies who really recognise that their people do need more support than ever right now. Mm. And that's not all about career development. That's in lots of different areas, whether that is mental well-being, whether that is just people who have the ability to listen and have empathy. And I don't think that's always necessarily managers and employee relationships. I think that's peer-to-peer. I have seen a lot of empathy and kindness, and we were chatting a bit about that before, and I think people are working really hard to try and put themselves in the shoes of other people and realize that though we are all experiencing in some ways the same thing, our own personal experience of it is very, very different. And I think you could be in exactly the same team in exactly the same company right now, doing exactly the same job and having a dramatically different day-to-day experience. And you know, I know some people who are, you know, perhaps even quite enjoying the time and space that lockdown is affording them. And I know other people who are finding it incredibly overwhelming and a real struggle to make everything work. And we actually did a really interesting poll on Instagram where we said, do you feel like you have more or less time to learn right now? And so out of 10,000 people, it was honestly pretty much a 50-50 split.
Wow.
Which we never get. We never get that in our polls. You're always getting like 70-80% because the nature of you're all in the same community, you probably perhaps have some similar thoughts and beliefs. But we can just see at the moment that I think everybody would like that opportunity to learn and perhaps think a bit about themselves. But I think it's more realistic perhaps for some groups than others.
Yeah, I'm definitely in the much less time than usual category, given the sort of childcare aspect of it. Like, I heard a good thing on LinkedIn the other day that was saying, we're not all in the same boat with this. We're in the same storm.
Yeah.
And our boats look very different.
That's a good way of describing it,
Some of us have much bigger boats and some people are in dinghies and some people are swimming and it's like everybody's different, but the storm is the same, but everything else is different. Have you had anyone contacting you guys on, you know, Instagram or LinkedIn or anywhere saying, I'm on furlough and the 2 months sitting in my house not doing my job has really made me realize that I hate my job and I need to do something else? Like, have you noticed any of that? Like, it's because I think a lot of people are using this as a time to, I think it forces all of us to really think about where our attention goes and what our priorities are. Have you noticed any trends around that?
Yeah, I think we have been asked the question more, I would say, slightly almost before the career change. The thing that I'm seeing the most is now a good time to make a career change. It's almost like the bit before the career change is like, is this the right time? And I think some people are thinking, oh, well, actually, perhaps this is the momentum and the little push that many of us need to do something different. Should I be using this to propel me in a direction that I'm more motivated by? Versus, and I think on everyone's mind is job security, stability. Is it actually a harder time to do that? Because will companies be recruiting less? Will they have less money to invest? Are they less likely to take a chance on somebody who perhaps has less traditional experience, for example? And I think they're really good questions for people to be asking. The thing that I always encourage people to do is, I think often when you're making a career change, it always feels really dramatic, doesn't it? It really feels like we were over here and then we're going to make some really big life-changing move into something that is a world apart from where we are today. All of the research certainly that I've read and my experience coaching groups and teams of people is the people who make those changes from something to something quite different tend to do it in incremental steps. You know, it tends to be movement by degrees rather than a 180 change in direction overnight. And so where I would always start, if you're thinking about making a career change, is think about, we talked about earlier, exploring different career possibilities. So what are all the different ways that you could make that change? And what are all the different changes you could make? So it might be about, is it about discipline, i.e. marketing versus sales? Is it about a different type of marketing? Is it about a different type of industry? Is it a different type of company, i.e. big versus small, etc.? So really try and tease out, what are the changes you're trying to make and why? And what are you really looking for? So what are you hoping will be different in the new world that you're trying to create for yourself? And then be quite creative about, okay, well, where might I get those things? Because for some people, it might be, well, I really want more accountability. I want more ability to see projects through from start to finish. For other people, it might be, I want to get closer to what it feels like to really run a small business day to day. And that's always difficult to get in a really big company. So I think just being really clear about why. Like, why do you want to make that move and what are you hoping to gain? And then just start with your strengths. Always start with, what have you got to give? And make sure you do the second part. How will that be useful for where it is you're hoping to go? Because I do think when you're changing further away from where you are today, you have to work a bit harder on behalf of the people you're hoping are going to employ you to demonstrate the value, the usefulness, how what you've got to give will be really helpful for them. Because you are asking somebody to take perhaps a bit more of a chance on you, and it's perhaps a slightly harder choice. So what I do find reassuring is things like Matthew Syed's work in Rebel Ideas on cognitive diversity does demonstrate that if we get people with different backgrounds, with different experiences together, those are the people that will solve the hard problems for organisations. And it's definitely something that's a newer thought for me, so it's something I'm still mulling over. But what I hope is that will help leaders and organisations to be convinced of the value of bringing together diverse in its largest and broadest sense teams of people, and not feeling like if we work in retail, we can only recruit people who've got retail experience, and that actually somebody from a startup could actually be really valuable in that world. And I do see the progressive companies that we work with through Amazing If are certainly more and more open-minded to, you know, not necessarily a traditional staircase like ladder like CV or LinkedIn profile. And then what I really hope that does is it proves that that does work, that different people from different backgrounds with different experiences all have opportunities to add value.
And I think there's just a natural shake-up of things going on, whether we like it or not, right now. So that hopefully presents some ropes to jump on and grab and swing through the jungle and those kind of things too, right?
Yeah, I really hope so. I think one of the barriers that we do hear sometimes is where people say they've had particularly squiggly careers is just how you articulate those to other people. And I think just looking for those, I always think, look for the constant threads. Often, though we might have done very different things, there are usually still things that we have in common about every opportunity that we look for. So I mainly have worked in very large organizations, but I have done lots and lots of different jobs. And what I started to realize is what all of those jobs have in common is actually is about creation and newness. So I was often the slightly weird and wonderful one in a very big kind of corporate setting. And every corporate setting needs some of those weird and wonderful people. And that's why I often did jobs that people hadn't done before, because the ambiguity, the blank piece of paperness of it really appealed to me. So for me, it felt like a really big leap to run my own company, because I'm used to being in massive structures where you've got lots of support around you, lots of stability. I've worked at places like Sainsbury's and Barclays. And I was thinking, am I going to be successful, in inverted commas, if I go from a 200,000 people organization to, you know, one of 2 to 5?
Yes.
That feels. I just said about you don't go 180. And I've already said it wasn't 180 overnight. It was a 6-year process.
Yeah.
But I think one of the things that reassured me in terms of would I enjoy it? Did I know my why of that move? And did I have anything? Was I actually going to be useful? Was I going to be any good? Was when I started to look at all the things that I had in common in terms of the choices that I made, actually lots of those things are useful in running your own business, creating value, spotting opportunities, developing ideas, helping to develop other people. All of those things are as present in Amazing If as they were in the jobs that I had at Sainsbury's. I'm just doing it in a very different context now.
I'd love to hear more about that transition. I remember when we had dinner,
feels like a lifetime ago.
I can't think when that was. Was that like about October last year or something? Or was it like 2 years ago?
I don't know.
Was it like 2018, 2019?
I don't think it was 2019.
But anyway, whenever we had that dinner, whenever that was, I remember you saying that you were still running quite fast growing marketing agency, and then you were fitting in Amazing If around the edges of that, evenings, weekends, one day a week, that kind of thing. And I remember just thinking to myself, wow, you've got two entities there that are both tugging on your attention and demanding for as much of your attention as possible. And whenever you're running something, it's tempting that becomes the thing that you spend your evenings and weekends on, let alone have another organization and a business partner who presumably also wants as much of your time and attention as possible. So just wondering, how did you juggle that? And what did you learn about yourself by having to juggle those two roles that both have big responsibilities?
Yeah, I think, so I don't think it's for everyone. It's the first thing to say. and I think one of my values, so one of my core values, the things that, something that's like part of my DNA and something that really motivates and drives me is, and it doesn't sound very glamorous, but it's definitely true, is variety. I really thrive on variety. And actually it is one of the reasons I also enjoy running my own thing, because running your own business is variety is every day, because certainly no 2 days are the same. And I think for me, when I've done multiple jobs simultaneously, every single one of those, I felt like I was learning and growing.
Mm.
I felt like I was better at each of them because I had a multitude of things. So I felt like they had nice overlap, but without being the same or contradictory. And I also felt I was always doing things that I enjoyed, because it is a lot of your time. I'm not going to pretend otherwise. It's a lot of your time. And certainly by the time I was managing director for a creative agency, I'd got a 1-year-old who obviously became a 2-year-old. And that was a whole new, that was a whole new thing as well. Like, you know,
something else to put on your time and attention, right?
Exactly. And I think I probably found that one, and we can talk about that. I found that harder, that much, much harder than I found that significantly more difficult than actually I did doing, you know, multiple jobs. And so I think it's in my nature. I think I have the capability to be able to switch between different contexts. And I'd also been doing, I've been practicing it, that point about deliberate practice. I've been practicing it for a while, because I actually started working a 4-day week at Sainsbury's 5 or 6 years ago, when actually it was very unusual to work a 4-day week and not have kids. And to be, you know, to be running this little entity, I don't think anyone knew quite what to make of me. But again, it was okay, because I was in that weird and wonderful bracket. So I was probably just being very Sarah-like.
Because on the surface, that's the side hustle that you're going to leave us for, isn't it? That's the way a lot of people might look at that.
Yeah, I think I was very lucky at that time. I had a boss who was on the board at Sainsbury's, a lady called Sarah Warby. And Sarah, I think, recognised that 1 day a week was me giving me the opportunity, I think, to just do things differently. So to start from scratch, to be really creative, to experiment in just ways that you can't do within a corporate setting. But I was still fully committed to, really loved my, I loved Sainsbury's, I loved working there, and I loved my roles that I had at Sainsbury's. I was head of corporate responsibility. I moved on to be head of marketing strategy. And those roles were pivotal. I grew so much. I worked with some brilliant people. And actually, I had no intention at that time of leaving Sainsbury's to go and run Amazing If. I just liked the duality of it, the polymathness like of doing those things. And I think people can see that, and they can feel that. And I was as dedicated to Sainsbury's and to what I was doing. And I think it actually comes down to trust. I think if you work for somebody who trusts you and trusts that you will make it work, and that when you say you're still really committed to it, and that you're not spending all your time wishing you were somewhere else, then I think you just prove that by how you show up, how you turn up. People can tell, I think, whether you care or not. And I always really did. So that always worked really well. And then I think I did obviously get to a natural point where I thought, actually, now does feel like the time to make the very slow, gradual leap that I eventually made.
Yeah, well, and it helps when you've got a book that's a number one Sunday Times bestseller as well, right?
To give the,
give the business a little bit of an endorsement. So we're talking about the squiggly career, and I'm going to talk about a couple of bits from that book in a minute. Just before we talk about the book, what have you learnt by now being full-time in a small business, and particularly what message or lesson would you give to anybody who's in a big entity and thinking about doing something similar and is frightened by it or interested in it?
So the best thing about running Amazing If, and I'm pretty convinced that I wouldn't do it otherwise, is the fact that I have a business partner. And my business partner, Helen, we met over 20 years ago at university. She's very different to me. She's very extrovert. I'm very introvert. We live our lives in quite different ways, but we really love working together and are very united in our values and our drive for this kind of democratizing career development idea that we're both so kind of passionate about. And so actually what I've learned since I've been in it full time, I was always actually a little bit worried that Helen and I were almost too similar. So though we've got different personalities, you know, we'd both done very similar jobs in big corporates and led very big teams. And I wondered if when we were both in it full time, would we both clash a bit or try to lead? Both of us tried to take charge a little bit too much. And would we be complementary, or would we just have too much sameness? And I was very mindful of, you want different people to bring different things. But actually, the longer that we've worked together in this fully kind of immersed way, I've actually seen more of our differences than I have our similarities. So yes, we absolutely have the same vision for what we want to do in our business, but actually how we work, our ideas, the way that we think is all pretty different. And so that, I found that actually reassuring when I started to feel more and more difference in us both. And also I think for me personally, I think I need that other person, so that you've got someone to pick you up when you do go for the run and you have the lows, and you want someone to share the highs with as well. And there are so many highs and lows. I mean, everybody talks about the analogy of the highs are higher, the lows are lower. I think it is true. And I think partly it's true because it's your own entity. So you feel everything more keenly. Like Sainsbury's had, if I think about some of the impact that Sainsbury's have and some of the challenges and some of the wins, they were obviously massive compared to, you know, the positive impact Sainsbury's can have on communities is massive compared to the work that we do. But I think just how you feel everything when you have worked on it and it's kind of your ideas is just so much heightened. So I think just having someone to go on the roller coaster with, for me personally, I think has been critical. I don't think I would do it by myself. And I'm really glad that we have that difference of styles, personality, contribution, but that we share such a strong sense of what we're doing and why we're doing it.
Yeah, and difference expressed as complementary rather than conflicting, right? Which is always the important thing with business partners.
Mm-hmm.
You talked about Sainsbury's there, and you, for a while, you were the head of corporate responsibility and society there.
Yeah.
So I suppose the obvious question about Sainsbury's right now is, if you were still working there, what would be the conversations you'd be having? What are some of the key issues that you see that supermarkets have risen to the challenge around or not risen to the challenge around?
Well, Sainsbury's is a genuinely values-led business. And I suspect right now I sound exactly like I did when I was the head of corporate responsibility. But I've worked in enough big organisations, I think, to know and to feel the difference between values that are just on a wall because a company thinks they should be, and values that are lived and breathed day in, day out by the company. And they kind of really mean them and they hold themselves to account to those values. And certainly Sainsbury's is an organisation where, I think because it's where it started in terms of where they source food from the Sainsbury farm and the family, and it's always kept that sense of, you know, wanting to support their colleagues and the communities that they serve is the way that they would describe it. So the shops that we all go into, whether you're going into a shop at the moment or getting online delivery, you know, it will have been incredibly stressful, the pressure on supply chains. And it is a people-based business. You know, there are lots of people coming into work every day. The decisions that they will have had to make very, very quickly and the pressure they will have been under and the scrutiny will have been immense. And I know from the people that I'm still friends with who've been working there, everybody has been so committed to like wanting to kind of help, wanting to play a positive role. Because I think we all probably feel that is in such a tough time, we always want to try and help if we can. And I think that's certainly what I've seen of Sainsbury's, and I'm sure lots of the other supermarkets, is people going, how can we help? And I heard a lovely example of how Sainsbury's recently, they delivered a load of Easter eggs that they had to care homes up and down the country. And I think just those small moments of kindness and trying to help in any way they can, that little small story that somebody told me, who actually works in the care home sector, and said, I contacted Sainsbury's and they made that happen. And they will have made that happen in the midst of so much other stuff operationally happening. And it didn't surprise me, but it reassured me that they are continuing to stick to the things that they were really good at when I was there. So I'm sure it's tough, and I'm sure they won't have got it right every time, because nobody does a business at that scale. It's almost an impossible task. What I do hope, though, is that I think everybody, the general public, I hope has given every organisation the kind of the benefit of the doubt that they are trying to do their best in what is difficult circumstances. And of course, some people kind of get it more right than others. But certainly, I think they tried very quickly to do the social distancing. I think the prioritising vulnerable elderly people in terms of the shopping segments of the day, I think was a brilliant idea. I think most supermarkets have done that. And actually, they have got back on their feet, I think, surprisingly quickly. Certainly, when I've been into the supermarkets over the last couple of weeks, they seem to have managed to get things back on the shelves. And if you think about the scale of that challenge, how quickly they've managed to restore some level of normality, I think it's pretty incredible.
It does feel a bit like that when you walk into a supermarket now. It's like you're not having this end of days feeling like you were having a few weeks ago, of like there being like one lonely jar of expensive sauce left on the entire tin dial or whatever. It does feel like it's got back to some normality.
I think the day that I could get a really like a Heinz tomato soup, and the day that that was back on the shelves, I thought, hey, there's hope. There's hope.
Yeah.
we might make it.
It's all going to be okay. One of the things I wanted to talk about from your book was the idea of the personal manifesto.
Mm-hmm.
which I really like. So there's this whole chapter that talks about how to develop a personal manifesto. Do you want to just explain what your personal manifesto is and why is that important to people?
Well, I think personal manifestos or vision boards or whatever people want to do, and I don't think it matters what you call them, are just a really good way of, I think, getting out of your head the things that are important to you and making them real in some way. So whether you like to visualize things, whether you like to write or draw or create, I do think having this sense of the things that really matter to you, your constants. And I think those reminders can be particularly useful when you're trying to make decisions, when things are hard, perhaps. Or if you're just trying to think, if you're just feeling a bit stuck, I think, again, having something that you feel grounded by and that just feels like it's your creation of yourself can be, certainly I found, has been really useful. And actually, funnily enough, for somebody who I'm usually pretty visual, like we run all our workshops doing like live drawing and we draw all of our tools live, I actually prefer writing to doing vision boards. And Helen's very much a vision board person. And actually, I first did this, I was on a leadership program where they encouraged you to do that classic thing of sending a letter to yourself. Send a letter to yourself in 6 weeks' time about what you're thinking, feeling, what would you want to do differently as a result of the learning experience that you have. And that was almost a mini version of this manifesto that I ended up creating. And I think for me, what it's useful for is just the things that guide me. So mine talks a lot about thinking, creating and learning. And that almost, we talked before about squiggly careers and you can never quite sense what might happen next. And we're all about exploring possibilities. The things that stay true for me are always these ideas of creating and learning and actually writing it in a way that works for me in language that is my own language. Again, just helps, I think, me to just, feel really grounded in the decisions that I make. And just remind you, I think, what's most important to you.
So there's a couple of bits of yours that I really like. The learn bit, stay curious and always be a work in progress, I really like. And the bit at the bottom just says, happiness is Tom, brackets partner, Max when he sleeps, close family and friends, sport, developing and launching new enterprises, helping people thrive in a squiggly career, the seaside, autumn, fiction, cookies and a cup of tea. I just love the ending of that. It's just really sweet.
Well, basically, that is my life in a paragraph.
Yeah.
And it's funny, when you do that exercise, I think, you can talk about how powerful gratitude and reflecting about what you do have rather than what you don't have can be.
Yeah.
And I think when I remember writing that for the first time, so I first wrote this 6-7 years ago. And I've only updated it once, the kind of happinesses section. And that was because I had a baby, because I had Max.
You had to add Max in there. Yeah.
I had to add Max, obviously. Yeah. It was sort of mandatory, but he's getting a bit better now. He's a bit older. He sleeps a little bit more. But everything else is the same.
Yeah.
And I find that really interesting. And I think when I first wrote it, it did actually help me to figure out that a lot of the things that made me really happy are quite simple things, and there were things that actually I already had in my life, which I was very grateful for. But I think you work hard to keep those things. I don't think they just happen, and to make time for them and to prioritize them. And if I get to the point, I'm someone who could probably work a lot of the time, as in all day, every day, including weekends, because I really enjoy the work that I do. But I really feel it if I've not read a new fiction book for a while, or if I love to walk and I find walking really helps my thinking and my ideas. And if I was able to go to the seaside, a walk by the sea, and just thinking, when was the last time I did those things is a good question, I think, to ask yourself. I don't sort of believe in the work-life balance thing, but I think you are constantly calibrating. You're constantly thinking, actually, how do I integrate all of the things that are important to me in a way that works for me, and not necessarily in this moment, so in this day or in this week, but maybe in this month. I was even reflecting on, so last week we had a particularly busy week work-wise. But then both Helen and I this week have prioritised more time for individual learning, and we have protected that time. And actually, I'm going to take a day off for Max's birthday next Tuesday, and I'm going to spend a bit more time doing some running and some yoga this week, and just making sure that nothing goes out of kilter for too long, I think has been a good day-to-day reminder for me.
Because that's the thing about work-life balance, isn't it? Is that whatever you call it, it's a flawed term. But, if you're doing work that you love, it's very easy to say, I can be working all the time and work doesn't feel like work and whatever, but you are still neglecting, you know, maybe running or health or family, or like there is still something that you're neglecting even when you love what you do, right?
Yeah. And I think you have to recognize that by doing those other things, you will do better work, which is definitely true. And you have to recognize that by doing those other things, it also makes you more resilient. So I was interviewing Martha Lane Fox last week and I was about resilience specifically. And I said to her, what do you think has made you the most, like what's helped you to build your resilience personally and professionally? And actually she talked about it's having other things. It's having other things outside of work that you appreciate, are grateful for, that you enjoy, and you don't become so all consumed and all focused on just the work that then if things go wrong or if things get in your way and that's your everything, then obviously it's much harder to then generally be resilient. And I thought that was really interesting observation from somebody like her who's on the board of Chanel and Twitter. She's run lots of very successful companies and also personally had to recover from a very serious life-threatening car accident where she had to relearn to walk again. And so that was just, I found that really interesting. Though I'm definitely someone who could be tempted by and fall into the trap of working too much, I think I really recognize that point about how I will do better work and I'm really motivated to do better work. So that stops me doing it. But also just the point about being resilient, staying curious and not always feeling like everything has to be always about running. Because I think when you run your own business, there is that temptation of thinking, well, if I don't do it, no one else does, which is also true. But I think you have to let that go and you have to let go some of the stereotypes about entrepreneurs like working 24/7 and you never stop working and that's the life of an entrepreneur. And I don't want that to be my life. And I don't buy that either as the only way to run your own business successfully is to never stop working.
I think it's really dangerous, that whole hustle culture thing. And back to the Instagram comparisons and the fact that people often do compare themselves in very negative ways. Yeah, it doesn't feel like a good strategy. And it also doesn't feel like a description of lots of people who I know who run successful businesses, right? So they're obviously doing it a different way, but then they're not bothering to put that on Instagram videos.
Yeah, and I think that's probably the thing to remind yourself of if you're listening to this and thinking about setting up your own business, or you're setting it up and thinking, am I running this in the right way? Is probably the stories that we hear the most tend to be from maybe that more traditional entrepreneur hustle types who are also very good at often using social media and sharing those. Exactly, that's part of their raison d'etre and how they work. Whereas actually there'll be loads of very successful businesses under the surface where their stories are often untold or they're just not as well known. And those people often, like exactly as you said, aren't running businesses in those ways. I mean, I would never want people to think that you don't work really hard, because I do think that is true. And I think I worked really, really hard when I worked in a corporate environment as well. For me, that's no different. Do you work hard? Do you care about your work? Those things are still true for me. And I do think one of the things that's really important, certainly for us at Amazing If, is are we running a sustainable business? So, and part of being sustainable is we need to be sustainable as individuals, like feeling mentally, for sure, healthily. Yeah. I want our business to last forever. I don't see it as a, you know, I guess because we're not trying to create an entity to sell, I guess that puts you in a very different mindset perhaps to the people who have to drive incredibly fast growth in a very short period of time, which I appreciate brings a whole new set of pressures working in that more private equity type world.
For sure. Yeah, I've been asked loads of times over the years, and I'm sort of 12 years into my business now. Mm-hmm. And whenever that question comes up, what does your exit look like? I always just say death. Because it's not about that, right? It's, you know, about the business doing good work and continuing to do that as long as I can possibly make that happen.
A really good one. That's a really good answer.
The one thing I wanted to touch about before we finish is you were telling me about this podcast series that you're doing around Ask the Expert. So do you want to just tell us about that?
Yeah, that'd be great. So we are launching a new 6-part Ask the Expert series, which is part of the Squiggly Careers podcast. So we've been doing Squiggly Careers now weekly for over 2 years. So I think there's about 142 episodes to catch up on if you're new to it. But we thought, particularly right now, it does feel like there are some skills that are particularly relevant and pertinent to the time we all find ourselves in. So things like resilience, which is why I was talking to Martha Lane Fox last week, psychological safety, purpose. So each week for the next 6 weeks, we've got a very short interview that will go out on a Thursday. It's about 10 or 12 minutes with real experts on each of those skills. So Martha Lane Fox talking about resilience, Rich Pearson, who's the founder of Headspace, talking about mindfulness, Simon Sinek talking about purpose, Holly Tucker, who's the founder of Not on the High Street, and Holly & Co. talking about creativity. So just brilliant, short, specific snippet interviews that will be full of inspiration, but actually, again, very focused on, as we said at the start of our conversation today, action and practical, useful ideas in terms of how you can develop that skill for yourself and why we think it will be particularly useful over the next year, 18 months. So if those skills feel like they might be something that you're interested in, I can tell you certainly the three interviews that I've done so far, the people are just absolutely brilliant. They really blow me away in terms of just both their insights, but also their ability to translate that into something that will be useful for all of us in our work, regardless of what you do.
Yeah, so go check that one out, and go and also check out The Squiggly Career, your number one Sunday Times best-selling business book, which is
Thank
very cool.
You.
So if people want to find more of what you do and connect with you, how do they connect with you?
So we're on Instagram, where we're just at AmazingIf. You can follow us and you can always DM us there. Squiggly Careers is our podcast. Both myself, so Sarah Ellis and Helen Tupper, really easy to find on LinkedIn. So you can always connect with us through LinkedIn. And we really like to connect with our communities. So if you've got any questions based on the conversation I've had with Graham today, or you want to explore something a bit further, or you're interested in any of the workshops that we might run for yourself or for your company, please do get in touch. We really do like to kind of chat to people personally. It's always a really nice thing to do.
Cool. Thanks, Sarah. And we were chatting a bit before, so I just realised I've kept you way longer than was in our diary. So I hope you're not now late for your next thing.
I'm not.
But just want to say thanks for being on Beyond Busy. And it's an interesting time, isn't it? But I look forward to hearing more about your learnings and what you and Helen are up to over the next few months, and how we all come out of this. So thanks again.
Thank you so much for the invite. I've really enjoyed our conversation.
So thanks again to Sarah for being on the show. One thing I wanted to mention is that as soon as we hung up, Sarah started talking to me about this new thing that Amazing If have just launched called the Redundancy Reset. So basically, it's a free program. And if you are going through redundancy as part of COVID and what's going on, then Amazing If have put together this program of free resources. So there's a Reboot section, which is an online career development program. There's a Reflect section, so all about how to overcome confidence gremlins, and lots of other resources to help you get in tune with yourself. And then Reset, so virtual coaching sessions and Q&As and all that kind of good stuff. So we'll put the link to that in the show notes, which you can find at getbeyondbusy.com. And yeah, it's just a great little program of free resources. So if you are going through redundancy, if you're interested in maybe just exploring what your options are around taking on a new career, just how to get support in what's going to be a very interesting job market over the next few months. So really good, extra layer of resources from Amazing If, all for free, and they just want to help. So go to getbeyondbusy.com and put the link to that in the show notes there. And you can also find it on the AmazingIf.com website. I also just wanted to say, so our sponsor for the show is Think Productive, which is my company, and we have now completed the process of moving all of our workshops to be available as live virtual. So if you are still working in a team, if you want some help around productivity, we can do all of our usual stuff. And of course, we've also got our dedicated resources for working from home. So you can find the dedicated stuff at thinkproductive.com/WFH. And then all of our regular stuff just at thinkproductive.com or thinkproductive.co.uk if you're here in the UK. And we're merrily plodding on with trying to just help as many people as possible in either paid capacities or unpaid capacities. It really kind of depends on where clients are at. And, you know, we've got a whole range of clients from kind of retail operations who are really struggling through to a few clients in kind of pharmaceuticals and medicine and health and all that sort of stuff who are really, really busy right now. So yeah, full range for us. And we're trying to do our best to really just support people and continue our work around spreading the good message of productivity and work-life balance. So yeah, Think Productive are our sponsors for the show. Go and check out thinkproductive.com. And the other thing I just want to say is for the last couple of weeks, as I record this, I've been sending out an email newsletter. This is the first time I've ever done this myself. Think Productive has obviously had one for years, which you can, of course, sign up to at thinkproductive.com. But mine is brand new, and I had 17 people signed up before the first one came out. So it felt very lonely and very, you know, it felt like one of those mountains where I'm just, you know, sat at the bottom looking up. But sure enough, we're on about 150 people now. It's growing pretty steadily and people finding us from all kinds of different places. So if you want to sign up to that, it's just grahamalcott.com. And then on the main homepage and actually at the bottom of every other page, you'll see a little form. Just fill that in and sign up. The idea is just to send out, I'm calling it Rev Up for the Week. So the idea is every Sunday night, I just send out an upbeat thought or idea for the week ahead. And the idea is it just puts you in a positive frame of mind for the week. So if you're, you know, sort of chomping through cornflakes on a Monday morning and looking through emails, mine will be one of the first that you'll see. Maybe you look at it Sunday night. Maybe you're looking at it if you're lucky enough to be on a train or on a tube commuting. Oh, I just miss trains. I really miss trains. That's one of those things. Honestly, this is probably the longest I've been in one city for probably the best part of a decade, I would have thought. And I just do have an itch to get on a train and go somewhere far away. But there you go. That's just that's my own little issue to deal with. Only other thing I wanted to do before we finish is just to thank Mark Stedman and Podient, my producer and platform for the show. And thanks also to Emily, who has been doing a great job of just getting the numbers up of our Beyond Busy listeners and just promoting the show. So if you are following me on Instagram, if you're not, I'm just at Graham Alcott, add me there. But she's been putting out little video clips of each episode. And that's just been really well received. Lots of people viewing those and liking those. And then putting the same stuff out on LinkedIn and on Twitter as well. So yeah, just really, you know, we're starting to get professional in this whole Beyond Busy thing. And, you know, we're up in our game. What can I say? It was actually my plan for the year anyway. And I guess COVID-19 leaves us with very little else to do. So I have to follow through on my intention. So that's that. I hope you enjoyed the episode. I certainly did. And we'll be back in 2 weeks' time with another episode. We've been kind of putting a few episodes in the down weeks where we've got interesting COVID stuff, helpful stuff, all that. So we might do that a bit more. But yeah, rest assured, we'll be back for sure in 2 weeks' time with another episode. So until then, take care. Bye for now. Bye.